Hello, my name is Rob Bennett. I'm the author of a book entitled Passion Saving, The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul-Satisfying Work. I'm also the publisher of the PassionSaving.com website, and I'm working on a second book entitled Investing for Humans, How to Get What Works on Paper to Work in Real Life. This is podcast number 59. I'm recording it on Thursday, December 11th, 2008. The PE10 level today is 15. That's fair value. So stocks purchased at today's prices offer a strong long-term value proposition. The title of this podcast is The Politics of Investing. I believe that this is a very important podcast theme. It's an area that we don't know much about, and that's what I'm always looking for. I prefer not to write about things that hundreds of other people have written about before me, because it's obviously hard to make a valuable new contribution if hundreds of smart people have traveled that path before you. The politics of investing is something that is rarely addressed in the literature. So this is an area where I feel I can make a contribution. The reason why it's podcast 59 before I get to it is that it's there's limited information on it. So it's an imposing topic. I would say, and I would say that I believe I am one of the world experts on the subject of the politics of investing today. I don't mean to brag by making that statement, but by chance, I happen to get involved in this great safe withdrawal rate debate, and it's an intensely political matter. There's of course investing issues are at the core of it, but politics is the dominant factor in the great safe withdrawal rate debate. It's at least 60% politics and maybe 40% investing. And the truth of the matter is the two issues merge. The great safe withdrawal rate debate is the merging point between investing topics and political topics. That's really what it is. And so I've been involved in the great debate. I've been the central figure in the great debate for close to 7 years now. So, I think I can fairly claim a good bit of expertise on the politics of investing. But do I know this subject? No. I can give some tentative thoughts. I can give some sketchy thoughts. And that's really all I can do today. And I believe that as time goes on, I will learn more. But I don't know that there's anyone alive today who can really address the politics of investing in depth. But I'm going to take a stab at laying out some preliminary thoughts in this podcast. And what usually happens in these podcasts is that as I do that, as I sketch out these thoughts, new thoughts occur to me. So one of the things I do when I record a podcast or write an article at the site or write a post to a discussion board is that I learn myself. And so that's part of the purpose. That it's true with all the podcasts, but this one is a particularly challenging one because the topic is so broad and so important. There's so many ways you could go examining the politics of investing. Now, let me just to introduce you to the subject, because I don't think that most middle class investors even are aware that politics comes up in investing. I certainly was not on May 2nd, 2002, the evening before the beginning of the Great Safe Withdrawal Rate debate. I think that most of us don't spend a large amount of time studying investing. We probably should spend more than we do, but we're not excited by it. We have other things we want to do with our lives, and we sort of believe that we can rely on the experts to guide us, and so we put it off, and we don't spend as much time on it as we probably should. But most of us are working under certain assumptions, and one of the assumptions is that there are all these smart people out there doing the best that they can, to intellectually understand investing and then to pass that information along to us. And if only it were so, if only it were so, we would live in such an innocent world. But that's not the reality. It's not even close to the reality. You know, if you really want to understand the politics of investing, you're going to listen to, you're going to have to listen to the earlier 58 podcast, because this question of the politics of investing comes up in all of them. But if there's something that sums it all up, it's that statement, two statements by Scott Burns, financial columnist at the Dallas Morning News, Scott Burns. Two statements he made tell us how important the politics of investing are. At one time, Scott was talking about the old school safe withdrawal rate studies. Why, you know, we determined back in May of 2002, with the benefit of John Walter Russell's research, that the old school safe withdrawal rate studies are analytically invalid, and that millions of middle class Americans are going to suffer busted retirements because they've used studies that get the numbers wrong to plan their retirements. And yet for 6.5 years now, those studies have not been corrected. Well, why? Is that not a fair question? Scott gave us the answer, I believe, in one of his emails to me. And Scott said, this is information most people don't want to hear. This is information most people don't want to hear. That's true. Scott is absolutely right. But that reality, that if you study investing, you learn things about how stock investing works. Obviously, that's the point of studying it. That's the point of studying the historical data and studying what the experts say and, you know, analyzing, you know, the books that are out there, as I try to do in a lot of these podcasts, all that sort of thing. The purpose is to learn. But what the middle-class investor is thinking is that the experts in the field learn, and then they naturally pass that information along to the middle-class investor. That's where they are wrong. That's where they are misled by what could be called naive thinking, ignoring the political element. The reality is, if the experts were to pass along what they know, they would be in hot water. Because investing is intensely emotional, and when the most important lesson of stock investing is that stocks, the risk of stocks depends on how, on the price level of the market. So stocks are offer an amazing value proposition when they're low priced, a very strong value, long-term value proposition when they're moderately priced, and a very frighteningly poor long-term value proposition when they are insanely high priced. So you have to know that if you want to invest successfully for the long term. But emotionally, most of us do not want to know it. We want to deceive ourselves. And the experts are in this very difficult position of, on the one hand, wanting to educate us, wanting to help us, wanting to guide us, wanting to give good strategies, and on the other hand, knowing that if they're too frank, too open, too clear in what they say, people will become very angry. People will become very angry at them and very hostile to the message. And of course, that's not good for business, but it's more than just that. I don't want to suggest that it's only that it's not good for business, but that obviously is a factor. People want to be liked. That's another factor. The experts want to be liked. And of course, the deepest politics of all is that the experts themselves are human, and they themselves have emotions, and so they themselves don't want to know the realities. Many experts, so-called experts, I put the words in quotes whenever talking about investing experts, I put the word experts in quotes. I don't think there's such a thing as an investing expert today because of this issue. Because the experts hide the realities not only from their readers and their listeners, they hide the realities from themselves. It's just the general thought is you don't want to go there. You don't want to learn how stock investing works, because if you do, you're going to get yourself in a big heap of trouble. It's the third valuations. There's a phrase in the political world. I'm glad this thought occurred to me because it's perfect for a podcast on the politics of investing. There's a phrase in the political realm. I have a background in politics. I worked on Capitol Hill for many years covering tax legislation for tax newsletters. So, you know, I have some background. It's strange the way life plays, you know, little tricks on you as time goes on. You develop skills in different areas, and you end up doing things you had no idea you would be doing when you were younger. And it's nice when something that you learned at an earlier stage of your life, you get to make use of it in a way that you never expected to make use of it. And I take that personally. I take that as evidence that there's a God. You take it for what you like, but the coincidences sometimes seem to me to be too great to just be chance. And so it does turn out. I actually got out of the political side. I became bored with it, and I came to the conclusion that, you know, I think I got into politics and reporting. A lot of people get into it because they want to change the world. When we're young, we're idealistic and we want to change the world. And I came to believe over time that politics does not have nearly the influence that most people think it does. I'm talking about the general sort of politics here. Democrats, Republicans, that sort of thing. I came to conclude that politics is sort of the last stage in a process in which a culture decides where it wants to go. And what really matters is the early stages. The politics just sort of follows from people's beliefs. And so I lost interest in it, and I don't spend much time following politics today. I used to read four newspapers every morning, and but not anymore. I don't read any newspapers today. I read a little bit on the internet when things pop up before me, but usually when I'm trying to find stuff out about personal finance, and I just happen to see things. But so I came to believe that the best way to help people, you know, the best way to change the world was by helping people to learn how to manage their money effectively, to save more effectively, and to invest more effectively. So that's where I spend my energies today. But in that time, when I used to cover Capitol Hill, they had a saying, and all the politicians, it's one of these, it's very much like the valuations. There's a great parallel here. Everyone who studies investing knows valuations is it. Valuations is the issue in which everything else turns. Everyone who's paying attention knows it. You know, there's some maybe that just aren't paying attention. They don't get it. But if you follow the literature, you know this. And, Rob Arnott, who was the editor of the Financial Analyst Journal, he's not today, but he was for a good number of years. He said not too long ago, a few years back, he said there's going to be a quote revolution in our understanding of how stock investing works. That's sort of my byword in all the work I do. I believe there's a revolution coming, and the revolution is the transition from the failed passive investing model to the investing model of the future, rational investing. Rational investing takes valuations into account. And what happened is that we learned through the academic research dating back almost 30 years now that valuations affect long-term returns, that the efficient market theory is wrong, that it is possible to time the market on a long-term basis. Not on a short-term basis, but you can time the market on a long-term basis. You can know, not with precision, but you can know to a reasonable extent what your stock return's going to be 10 years out if you know the valuation level at which you invest. So the key to successful long-term investing is looking at valuations and understanding how they work. That's the revolution that's coming. And I'm really just a journalist documenting the transition from the failed model to the model of the future. I'm trying to bring about this revolution, and hopefully to make it as peaceful a revolution as possible. But that's true. There's a parallel in the general political world with the subject of Social Security. I used to cover these tax bills, and the tax bills were almost always wrapped into budget bills. So there'd be one huge piece of legislation that would be passed each Congress. It was usually each 2 years, and this would be an omnibus bill, you know, thousands of pages. And I would work from the early days, you know, all through the development till the very end when the final bill was passed. And generally, these bills, you know, they have to give a title to legislation sort of to get it through. And it would be called, they usually would be attempts at balancing the budget. That would sort of be the they'd be the budget bill, and there'd be efforts there to you know, cut spending or whatever, increase spending, whatever it is they were doing. And the tax provisions, there'd be thousands of them, would be mixed in. And the issue of Social Security reform would always come up. And it was known, all the politicians knew, Social Security is the whole ballgame. If we don't fix Social Security, you know, the entire country's going to collapse, you know, because the debts are just massive. They're unimaginable to the average person as you go out into the future, because we have fewer and fewer workers supporting more and more retirees. And at some point, you just can't make it work. So Social Security is the key to the whole ballgame, and most of these other issues were sort of trivial in comparison. But you couldn't talk about that. That was, they had a phrase, they called it the third rail. Social Security is the third rail of budget politics. If you talk about Social Security, you would be removed from office. Because if you tell the truth about it, the voters won't stand for it. The voters are angry about what's been done to them, you know, through the various legislative decisions that have been made in the past. Most people don't understand the predicament that we're in. So this was the kind of thing that ultimately got me bored with politics, because you weren't talking about the real issues. All the stuff that gets reported in the newspapers, most of it is a sideshow. And the real issues are sort of lurking underneath the surface, and the politicians aren't bad people. They would love to be addressing it, but they can't. And some have tried, and they get their heads cut off. And so, you know, oh, you know, heaven help us all, but paradoxically enough, I ended up taking on the Social Security of personal finance in my own life some years later when I tried to discuss valuations accurately and realistically and honestly on discussion boards, on internet discussion boards, and had my head taken off. And so that's where we stand. But perhaps I should have learned my lesson better, that you don't go touching the third rail of discussion in your given area. But it's so important. Valuations are so important to investing success that I cannot in good conscience participate at any discussion board that does not permit honest discussion of valuations, because it's just too important. And I think the system that stands today, in which discussing valuations is taboo, is not permitted, to the point where this subject is actually prohibited on all retire early and indexing discussion boards to a greater or lesser extent. To the extent that such prohibitions actually have been put in place, you know, prohibitions on free speech on the internet, on issues that affect people's financial futures, you know, whether their retirements are going to go bust or not. I find this just incredible. As a journalist, it's just amazing to me. But you have to accept it. It happened. It's a reality, and it's obviously a political reality. It's not what we would call, most of us would not think of that as an investing reality. We think of investing as this intellectual exercise. What works? Practical. We think of investing as a practical subject, not a political subject, not a politically influenced subject. But it's intensely political, because what's going on is, everybody to a greater or lesser extent knows two different things. They know what they can say in public, which is limited, and especially limited in its helpfulness. There's, you know, the things you most need to say are the things you cannot say. And they know the realities. And everybody's making decisions. How much do I dare to say? To what extent do I let the cat out of the bag? And these are the dominant issues of today. It's been dominant for 7 years, ever since the beginning of the great safe withdrawal rate debate, even before that, really. That's really just when I got involved. It's been going on longer than that. But it's truly dominant since we experienced the price crash, because now all those retirees who are going to suffer busted retirements, their best chance of saving themselves is gone. They've lost the money. They can't get it back. And, you know, the people who are not retirees, they've lost money, and it's affected the economy now. You know, we now are in a recession. We have the possibility of going into a depression. The economy's in serious trouble. And so it's a lot harder now to dig ourselves out of this than it would have been had we addressed it at an earlier time, if we had addressed it more responsibly. So in one sense, the political questions are more pressing than ever. But that, it's not all bad news. I don't want to be gloom and doom. There's been a change in the willingness to discuss these issues, because While the price drop makes it more embarrassing for the experts to sort of come out with what they know, it makes it harder, makes it politically more difficult. On the other hand, it makes it politically more imperative that they do so, because middle-class investors today are very alarmed. They're very concerned. They are more open to straight talk than they were before. That's for sure. And so these are the dominant political issues of today, and the purpose of this podcast is to give a survey of them. Now, I got inspired to do this podcast when I was recording podcast 58, and I discussed in that one. Some other political issues. It was on evolution and environmentalism and other investing topics, I called it. And I quoted from Robert Shiller's book, Irrational Exuberance, page 203. And I quoted two paragraphs, and they were so powerful. I sometimes have these moments where I'm aware of things on a vague sort of level, you know, in the back of my mind. I knew that these paragraphs were important, but when I read them, I just thought, wow, they're more important than I ever realized. So, I'm almost at a point where I want to repeat them at the beginning of every podcast. I'm not quite going to go that far, but you need to listen to these words of Robert Shiller. Robert Shiller is a brave man, and he's a kind man. To have taken on the task of having put these words into print when he knew what he would likely be subjected to for having done so. I admire this man. Here's Robert Shiller. It is a serious mistake for public figures to acquiesce in the stock market valuations we have seen recently, to remain silent about the implications of such high valuations, and to leave all commentary to the market analysts who specialize in the nearly impossible task of forecasting the market over the short term, and who share interest with investment banks or brokerage firms. The valuation of the stock market is an important national, indeed international, issue. All of our plans for the future, as individuals and as a society, hinge on our perceived wealth, and plans can be thrown into disarray if much of that wealth evaporates tomorrow. Robert Shiller didn't write these words last month. He wrote these words He published these words in early 2000. He wrote them before that. The tendency for speculative bubbles to grow and then contract can make for very uneven distribution of wealth. It may even cause many of us at times to question the very viability of our capitalist and free market institutions. Oh. Have you heard articles like that? You've heard articles recently in the news, right? Where people are saying capitalism and the free market itself are under question today? Well, Robert Shiller saw this before it happened. It is for such reasons that we must be clear on the prospect for such contractions and on what should be our individual and national policy regarding this prospect. Of course, in the current political and economic climate, one incurs a substantial risk of embarrassment if one goes on record saying that stock market returns will be low or negative in coming years. Wouldn't you like to know, this is a Rob Bennett commentary, wouldn't you like to know in advance if stock market returns are going to be negative for a long time to come? Wouldn't that help you as an investor? Well, Robert Shiller's telling you, we know this. We've known this for a long time. His research dates back to 1981, but you can't say it. You can't say it. So people like you, all middle-class investors, suffer huge financial losses that could have been avoided if only we could say these things. This is a political issue. Our right to speak on the realities of stock investing is a political issue, not an intellectual issue, not an economic issue, a political issue. Back to Shiller. We have seen in this book that although the market appears to have substantial long-term forecastability when it is very overpriced, as it appears to be based on recent data, or alternatively when it is very underpriced, there is always considerable uncertainty about its outlook. But an observer who remains silent about the unjustifiably high values because he or she could be wrong about the outlook is no better than a doctor who, having diagnosed high blood pressure in a patient, says nothing because the patient might be lucky and show no ill effects. That's the excuse I have heard so many times, hundreds of times, on the problem with the old school retirement studies. The safe withdrawal rate studies are the studies we all use to plan our retirements, and they all give wrong numbers. And when you point out the correct numbers, when you say, you know, old school study author, please correct your study, what you hear back is, oh, it's possible. You know, we said that 4% is safe. Well, okay, the historical data says that the odds are 70% those retirements are going to fail, but they might survive. There's a 30% chance. How can you know for sure they're going to fail? There's nothing wrong with telling people it's safe to put all your retirement money on a bet that has a 30% chance of coming through. How do you know, Mr. Rob Bennett, how do you know these retirements are going to fail? I don't. I don't know they're going to fail. But I know what the word safe means. And I know that something that has only a 30% chance of surviving, according to the historical data, isn't safe. And I know that there's a public policy issue. If millions of retirements go bust, I know that people should be speaking out about it. I know that Shiller's right when he compares it to a doctor who knows that someone has high blood pressure and keeps his mouth shut because the patient doesn't want to hear the diagnosis. That doctor is failing to do his job. This is a political issue. This affects us all. When the information we use to plan our retirements and to invest for financial freedom, when that information is poisoned, as it is today, by the popularity of the passive investing model, it hurts us all. It doesn't just hurt those with money in stocks. It doesn't just hurt the people who suffer the busted retirements. It hurts every citizen of this country. Here are some words from, all of this is sort of his preface, so, but I want to set the stage before I get into the meat of the podcast. Page 66 of William Bernstein's book, The Four Pillars of Investing, he says, human beings are quintessentially social creatures. That's why politics influences every human endeavor. Human beings are quintessentially social creatures. We don't sit alone in rooms and think grand thoughts about how to invest. We converse with our friends and our neighbors and our coworkers and our community members, our fellow community members on discussion boards. Human beings are quintessentially social creatures. In most of our endeavors, this serves us well. But in the investment arena, our social instincts are poison. That's why investing is such an intensely political subject. In most of our endeavors, this serves us well. But in the investing arena, our social instincts are poison. That nails it. What our investing model should be doing is telling us to avoid our social instincts. It should be helping us to overcome our social instincts. Passive investing does just the opposite. Our social instinct is to ignore valuations, to just think, common sense tells me I should lower my stock allocation when prices are insanely high, but I don't know. I want to roll the dice. You know, maybe I'll get lucky. Maybe it'll all be different this time. Maybe valuations don't matter as much as it seems like they should matter. We all have that thought. We all have the get-rich-quick impulse. What we need are experts telling us to overcome that, giving us tools to overcome it. And instead, we have experts telling us, hey, passive investing says you don't have to change your allocation. Passive investing says it's okay. Go with that feeling. Go with that gambling instinct. Take a chance. What could go wrong? You might lose your retirement money, but you can tighten your belt. If you lose all your life savings, you can always tighten your belt. How many times have I heard that? When people's retirements go bust, they can tighten their belt. That's what I hear. It's political. It's political because our intellect tells us one thing. Our intellect tells us passive investing can never in a million years work in the real world. But the politics presses us in the other direction. The fact that we are social animals and the fact that our social instincts in this one arena are poison creates a political problem in shooting straight about how stock investing works. Here's another line from Bernstein, and that's the end of the preface. We'll get into the meat. This is from page 161 of my copy, and he says, when enough, the moral for the actors in the recent internet drama is obvious. When enough investors find themselves shorn, scapegoats will be sought. Minor offenses, which in normal times would not attract notice, suddenly acquire a much greater legal significance. The next PCORA committee drama already seems to be shaping up in the form of congressional inquiries into the Enron disaster and brokerage analyst recommendations. It is likely that we are just seeing the beginning of renewed government interest in the investment industry. This book was published in April 2002. Bernstein here is talking about Enron. He's saying the losses suffered in Enron are going to cause congressional investigations. Well, I don't know what the size of the losses in Enron were to investors, but they were tiny compared to the losses we've suffered in the passive investing stock crash of 2008. Those losses are at over $8 trillion. There are going to be congressional hearings into how this happened. I cannot imagine how that will not come to pass. And you know, there are different people who are going to put forward different ideas on how it happened. I'm going to put forward my take, and my take is, you know, we can hang people, and you hear people talking about it. We can hang people from a tree if that makes us feel good. I think that's the wrong way, because hanging people doesn't solve the problem. You know, there may be particular individuals who are egregiously, you know, they're involved in egregious frauds, and an example has to be set. So I don't say that that should never happen. But what I say is that's the tip of the iceberg. This kind of egregious fraud is the tip of the iceberg. What matters is the iceberg underneath the water, the giant iceberg underneath the water. The giant iceberg is what Scott Burns is talking about when he says we can't tell people the realities of safe withdrawal rates because it is information they do not want to hear. You know, we have met the enemy, and he is us. We need to encourage the experts to shoot straight with us. If we encourage them, they'll do it. I know this because I've spoken to a good number of them, and I've read the books of a good number of them, and a lot of the big names out there are trying to get this information out. They're trying to tell us about valuations. They're trying to tell us the old school safe withdrawal rate studies can't possibly work. As these quotes from Shiller and Bernstein reveal, and you know, and many others that I've discussed on earlier podcasts, you know, they're trying to bring about a revolution in how we understand how stock investing works, but they are afraid. That's politics. They are afraid to some extent for good reason. I think they need to be less afraid. I encourage them to be less afraid. I see it as my job to buck the experts up, to get them to take a little bit of a stand. Because when a few take a stand, it makes it easier for all the rest to do the same. That's how we make this transition from the failed model, which at one time people thought worked. In the 1960s and 1970s, there was academic research indicating that passive investing really did make sense. And the problem is that the bull market made it politically difficult to speak these truths in public once we learned that it's not so. That valuations do indeed affect long-term returns. Investors do indeed need to change their stock allocations when there are massive changes in price levels. So we need to, this is the drama going on. And I read articles on investing almost every day. And you know, there's merit in there's so many articles of merit put out every day. But I have two reactions to most articles I see. One is, yes, there's merit there, and I see that, and I'm grateful for it. But the other is that so many are missing the main point. They're missing the main show. They're talking about these details. And the drama, the core of the drama, is this valuations question. And what can be said? The taboo on speaking honestly about what the academic research has shown us over the past two or three decades. And we've got to get that out. And once it gets out, I truly believe we can enter the golden age of stock investing for middle-class investors, because we know today more than we have ever known about how stock investing works. We just can't say it. And what we can say is the opposite of what we know. Passive investing is the opposite of the truth about investing. Passive investing says ignore valuations. The historical data says valuations are the most important thing you need to be talking about. So not only can we not tell people the truth, we're if you're in this field, you're required to tell them the opposite of the truth. Can this situation remain? I don't think so. I believe that it's politically untenable. And that's, of course, why it is the third rail. The people who know their stuff, they know how delicate this is. And that's why, that's just as they know Social Security is delicate. That's why it's the third rail. But that doesn't mean we don't need to address it. It means we do need to address it. We need to address it with some care. And that's why I say the answer is not to hang people from trees. The answer, I have an earlier podcast where I say love is the answer. We need to love the experts. We need to love the truth. And the way we open this up is through love, but love does not mean going along with whatever, you know, excuse of the day is offered. Love means being a little tough sometimes. There's a phrase I use on discussion boards. You know, I say it takes a tough man to make a tender chicken, the Frank Perdue slogan. Sometimes love means pointing out that an expert has endorsed, a retirement study that is analytically invalid. The expert might be a little shaken up. Wait a minute, that's not love. That hurts my feelings. Well, no, that's love, because if you've endorsed a study that's analytically invalid, you need to be distancing yourself from that study. And the person who puts you on the spot, so to speak, is helping you to distance yourself. He's helping you. He's acting out of charity. He's acting out of love. One other quote that has to be said, and I won't quote. I don't have the exact words. I'll paraphrase. But Robert Shiller was quoted in, I think it was Fortune magazine. They quoted some people in an article I saw this morning, and he had a wonderful quote. And he said, his bottom line was, he was talking about whether it's safe to invest in stocks today or not, and he gave a nuanced answer, which is accurate. It's what I always try to put forward. I always say at the beginning of my podcast, stocks offer a strong long-term value proposition today. That's true. But the emotional side of investing is at the most, you know, it's a 10 on a scale of 10 today. Passive investors have been hurt so badly that they can't take a 50% drop in prices at this time. So if you're a passive investor, I advise you to lower your stock allocation, not increase it. The value proposition is far, far better than it's been for a long, long time. But if you're a passive investor, you need to get over that first. You need to get over the emotional pain, and you need to learn the ABCs of investing, the fundamentals, how valuations affect long-term returns. If you're a rational investor and you've been going with a low stock allocation, say 20%, during the time when prices were at insanely high levels, then by all means, you should be investing heavily in stocks today. But that emotional factor is critical. And Shiller was talking about that. And he said, he was saying, we have seen a loss of confidence in the markets. That's the key point. And he said, this is a psychological problem we're dealing with. See, we're not dealing with an economic problem anymore. The economic problem's been solved. And all these people are talking about all these things to get the economy moving again. You know, all these people in Washington. And this is why I say I grew weary of it, because they're talking about the wrong stuff. And I mean on both sides of the aisle. It's not an economic problem. We've solved it. We had a huge economic problem because of the massive bull market. We were telling people they had three times the life savings that they thought they had. And of course, that affected every economic decision. So we were making lots of poor economic decisions, all of us. But that's solved. We're back at fair value. We're not overstating things today. The stock market is pricing stocks appropriately today. So what's the hang-up? The hang-up is we're dealing with the emotional fallout of that huge bull market. We still haven't accepted that it was all pie in the sky. You know, we never earned that money. That money wasn't real. It was cotton candy. And the experts failed to tell us that. They failed to warn us about the dangers of believing that, you know, the numbers at the bottom line of our portfolio statements. You can't believe those numbers unless they're unless they're valuation adjusted. We need valuation adjusted numbers in order to appreciate the realities. So right now, the problem is a psychological problem. How do we break the news to people who have been told that passive investing works? How do we tell them that, no, actually, that's not right? Actually, valuations affect long-term returns, and you need to change your stock allocation if you want to be a, you know, when prices get out of control, if you want to be a successful long-term investor. When we do that, we will win back investor confidence. When we win back investor confidence, you know, I'm not saying it will solve every problem in the world, obviously. There are always going to be problems in the world. But that's the biggie. If people can start to feel confident again about their financial futures, people will start to spend again. If people start to spend again, businesses will start to recover. If businesses start to recover, employers will start to hire workers again. All of the things that are going in the wrong direction today can be turned around by getting accurate information out to people about how stock investing works in the real world. And we have that information available to us. The academic research has shown us the realities, you know, dating back almost 30 years now. So we know what we need to know. What we need to, quote unquote, know is how to say it. How do we get around the taboo on telling the truth about stock investing? That's a political problem, not an economic problem, not an intellectual problem. We've seen progress. I don't want to be gloom and doom. There was over at the Vanguard Diehards board, there's a guy named Tar42, and he's a believer in honest posting. You know, honest posting was banned at Vanguard Diehards because a lot of us were involved in a discussion of how valuations affect long-term returns and how the old school safe withdrawal rate studies are analytically invalid. And there was a lot of abusive posting, and ultimately, unfortunately, I believe, Morningstar banned honest posting on valuations at that board. But there are people that discuss the subject honestly all the same, and as long as nobody turns them in, you can, you know, they put up good posts and you can learn. And this guy, Tar42, he put up a post which I thought was very good. He said, hey, it's a shame that all the dogmatic people, you know, left to go to Bogleheads, because he said, I've been looking at that Bogleheads board and they're putting out a lot of honest stuff today. They're putting out a lot of good stuff on how stock investing really works. And that's true. And they should be, you know, the leaders of that board. I've criticized them on many occasions because of their dogmatism and their abusive posting. The leaders of that board should now be applauded because they are allowing. There are some wonderful threads since the price crash at bogleheads.org, and I've been linking to them regularly at my Today's Passion section of my website. They need to do more. They need to take it to the next step. They need to, you know, go back to the people who were banned and encourage them. Some of the most popular posters in the history of that board were banned because they posted honestly on valuations. They should be welcomed back with open arms. That would send a signal to everyone there that the idea that you're going to be smeared because you post honestly on investing, those days are over. And of course, they're going to need to get the experts involved. There are experts that participate there. Bernstein is one that I quoted, and John Bogle is obviously one. And those people need to get involved. And we need a public statement, you know, that you know, I can't say how it should be worded. But what we need is an exit strategy. You know, in other words, if you're going to talk about politics, one of the things you want is an exit strategy. When an idea fails, you need a way to disassociate yourself from that idea. And many of these experts are, you know, Bogle more than any. Bogle's an unusual figure in that he's very much identified with rational investing. Many of Bogle's ideas, Bogle is the godfather of rational investing, one of the three. Bogle, Buffett, and Shiller. Bogle's ideas are core to the future, but he's also very much associated with passive investing. Bogle is Mr. Passive Investing. He needs to disassociate himself in some way. I can't say what words he should use. I could try, but he has to make that call. But it's critical. I think Bogle himself could turn this thing around. Because if Bogle does that, if Bogle disassociates himself from passive investing, from the most dogmatic strain, let's say, of passive investing, if he just said the words, "I'm not sure," I think that might do it. You know, I'm not sure. I used to think passive investing worked, but there's an awful lot of academic research showing otherwise, and I just can't buck it anymore. I've seen these horrible, vicious fights on these boards with my name on them, and they sicken me, and I want this to stop. We just have to acknowledge that, you know, there's a lot of doubt about this, and people need to be free to say what they believe, and that's how we'll get good answers, and that's how we'll restore confidence in the market. If Bogle made a speech like that, that would open up the Bogleheads board and the Vanguard Diehards board. Open those boards up, and you're going to unleash. There are hundreds of people at those boards who understand that valuations affect long-term returns. You're going to unleash a massive power. If you want to see what people are capable of, go to my website. There are articles at the website where I quote people, and you can read just average everyday people who have a much deeper understanding of how stock investing works than most of the big name experts that you hear quoted today. You know, all the material at my website, if you look at the stock return predictor, the retirement risk evaluator, the scenario surfer, the valuation-informed indexing strategy, all of that is the work product of hundreds of community members, possibly thousands of community members, who have contributed constructively over the past 7 years. That's where that comes from. You know, it's not Rob Bennett doesn't sit in a room and think grand thoughts by himself and produce this stuff. It's a community project. And Bogle has the power because he has that Bogleheads.org community and the Vanguard Diehards community, which can be brought up to where it used to be, you know, in a matter of 6 months. You open that board up to Honest Posting, and it's going to take off like a shot. I am certain of it, because people will be getting what they need. People are scared today. People want to know the realities. People want straight talk. They don't want this, you know, stocks for the long run, buy and hold gibberish. They want to know the real stuff. They want to know what works in the real world. And Bogle is in a position to make that happen. And all he would have to do is unleash the power of all of the everyday middle-class investors who have studied this stuff for years, have tried things, and who know what works, and who feel free. They're happy to share what they know. They're happy to share what they know. They don't have, you know, they're not in the position of the experts where if they tell the truth about investing, they're going to suffer a horrible financial price. These people are just sharing what they know out of love. You know, they're amateurs, so to speak. But sometimes it's good to be an amateur. An amateur means someone who loves a subject. A lot of the community members who have posted honestly on these questions and accurately on these questions and in an informed way in these questions, they love the subject and they will share for free. But they need to be assured that they will be protected, you know, from the goon posters, from the highly abusive, ugly, nasty stuff that we've seen from those who feel threatened by our discoveries of the past 7 years. To what extent, and this is a point I've already made, but I'll just circle about and make it a little clearer. I mentioned a Henry Blodgett article in a recent podcast, and Blodgett pointed out that bubbles, you know, well, he argued that bubbles are inevitable, that we're always going to do this to ourselves. We're always going to destroy ourselves. It's just inherent in human nature. And I think that's wrong. And the reason I think it's wrong is the reason I made brief reference to earlier. I don't believe in doom and gloom. Doom and gloom is self-defeating. When you start to get depressed about this stuff, you become pessimistic, you give up. I think one of the patterns that we've had through history is Blodgett is on to something for sure. There's no question that we have a get-rich-quick impulse that causes us to destroy ourselves and to destroy others. But what happens is there's inevitably, of course, you know, a stock crash that always follows a massive bull market. There are no exceptions in the historical record. The price we pay for bull markets is huge. Bull markets are the worst thing that can happen to stock investors because the long-term price is just a crushing defeat. That's why so many people you hear, you know, you talk to your grandfather and you'll hear them say, I will never own stocks, not in a million years. I don't care if the return is 20% a year. I will never own stocks. It's because they were crushed in one of the, you know, one of the price crashes like the one we're living through today. People think this is the worst. You know, there's a line in a Bob Dylan song. He says, I don't have it quite right, but it's something along the lines of, don't think you've seen the worst that can happen. It can always get a little worse, you know. And that's what people are living through today. People are saying, oh, I've lost 50% of my lifetime savings. Oh, you know, it's the worst that could ever happen. Well, it ain't the worst. And that's what Shiller pointed out in that article in Fortune. Shiller pointed out in that article, I've pointed out before, we've had three times when we went to insane price levels. And the average price drop on those three occasions was 68%. Shiller pointed out in this article, we're now at 60. 60% real is the drop in the S&P from 2000 till today. We didn't suffer 60% in the price crash. But if you go back and you adjust for inflation, we've seen a 60% loss of wealth. That's less than the average. You see, the price crash we're living through today so far is on the very lucky side. The average price drop for insane prices is 68%. We're now at only 60. So it can get worse. And if you try to look for a comparison to where we were as overvalued as we were this time, well, there are none. We were far, far more overvalued than we've ever been in history. So there are no precedents. But if you look to the worst case in history, the one that comes closest to where we were this time, that loss was 80%. So, you know, we could see a significant drop from here. And, you know, we could see a drop if you go down to the PE10 level that applied in these earlier bull market aftermaths, also known as price crashes. You know, we usually go down to a PE10 level of 7 or 8, and that would be another 50% drop from where we are today. So don't think that we've seen the worst. Now, that doesn't mean you shouldn't be invested in stocks today. I think you should be. The long-term value proposition is strong. You should be moving your money into stocks. You should be increasing your allocation if you've had a low allocation in the past. But be prepared for at least one more massive price crash. You've got to be prepared for it because it's certainly a live possibility. We might not see it. I think if Bogle gives that speech, we can avoid it. I think we can escape. But if he doesn't give that speech, my guess is that yes, we'll spend several years maybe sort of staying where we are, maybe gradually going up again, and maybe at the end of 4 or 5 years we're up to a PE10 level of 21, and then we see a price crash down to 7. We see another price crash of 2/3 of our accumulated wealth of a lifetime. And that might be the crash that will finally put the nail in the coffin of this passive investing nonsense, this idea that there's no need to change your stock allocation when prices go to insanely dangerous levels. That's the message that we're resisting. That's the taboo. And the market is teaching us a lesson. The market's saying, no, I am efficient in the long term. See, the markets are efficient in the long term. And the market's saying, no, you want to resist me? You want to continue to engage in fantasy land stuff? I'll crush you. Because I am rational. in the long term. I'll allow you to play your games. I'll allow you to talk gibberish for a certain number of years, but I won't allow it indefinitely. I will return to reasonable price levels. And if you're going to resist that, if you're going to resist that, I'll fight back. You know, I'm reminded of, we go to the ocean, you know, for vacation, and the oceans on the New Jersey shore, they're all eroding. The ocean keeps coming in. And the towns, of course, they have all this beach property that's very valuable. And the towns are trying to, you know, pull that back. They're putting sand out, you know. But I'm no expert in this field, but I question at times, is it going to work? You get the feeling that the ocean's going to come in and the ocean doesn't care what the town thinks. The ocean's just going to knock that sand down somehow. It's not going to stop. That's how I see the market. The market is rational in the long term, and that should worry you if you're investing irrationally. This is why passive investing can never work. Passive investing is purely irrational. The idea that valuations do not affect long returns is 100% irrational. And the market, in a long-term sense, is purely rational. The market is irrational for times. And during those times, passive investing can work very well indeed. But in the long term, the market is rational. In the long term, irrational investing does not pay off. So the political debate is, how do we get this message out? And I think that the Blodgett approach of saying, you know, it's all doomed, we can't change, I think that's too cynical. It causes people to lose hope. What's happened in earlier market crashes is that people give up. When they experience that last price crash, let's say we have one more, you know, 5 years out, we experience one more price crash. Instead of people saying then, oh, now I get it. Passive is wrong. Rational's the way to go. That's what I want to see happen. What I'm afraid is that the price crash, if we don't face it soon, the price crash will be so bad, so emotionally destructive. As Shiller says, we're dealing with a psychological problem, that people will just abandon stocks altogether. We'll all become like these people, you know, who lived through the Great Depression, who will say, I'll never buy stocks. Never, ever, ever. And I'll get my children to swear an oath they'll never buy stocks. That ain't the way. Stocks are wonderful. So, you know, let's get about the business of selling stocks, not through phony marketing, but selling stocks by teaching people the realities so that people can feel safe again investing in stocks, so that people can feel confident again. This is what Shiller's saying. We've lost our confidence. Well, you get confidence back not by telling more lies. People can see through the lies at this point on some level of consciousness. We get people's confidence back by being more straight. Oh, I'm going to run out of time. This is a subject I'm going to have to return to, but I'm going to try to hit a few more points. If I haven't mentioned this point, I want to mention it, that the people who love, Shiller has that quote about capitalism. He says that the free market itself is under question when we allow valuations to get as high as we did from 1995 through the first part of 2008. People are losing confidence in the free market, and we need to win that back. I believe I'm a supporter of free markets, but I certainly understand why people are losing confidence. The free market has failed people. You know, most people's greatest experience of the free market is through their stock holdings. The average person, that's how they participate in the free market, if they don't own businesses of their own. And they've been dealt an intolerable blow, a blow that they shouldn't have been dealt. They should have been told that to invest at the levels where most people were investing, in recent years, it was insanely dangerous. It was a gamble, and they should have been told that. And, you know, capitalism and all people that support free markets should be ashamed of themselves for failing to get that message out. If you love capitalism, you will be responsible in your promotion of it. You know, it's sort of like the alcohol companies. They put up these billboards now saying, drink responsibly, don't drink and drive, because they don't want alcohol to be banned. The same thing with the gambling casinos. You know, they say, don't bet above your head, because they don't want legislation against gambling. Well, If you care about free markets, you should not want legislation regulating the stock market. Well, if you don't want legislation regulating it, how about stepping up to the plate and demanding that some of the standards that apply in all other fields of human endeavor apply also in the stock investing area, that we tell people the realities so that if they want to take on risk, they take it on. But if they want to be reasonably protected from risk, they know how to go about doing so. Give people strategies for lowering their allocations at times when the risk is just too high for the average person to take on. It's a question of checks and balances, and the checks and balances have been left by the wayside during the 1990s when we got into that insane bull market. The wonderful news, I wanted to give more wonderful news, you know, more, you know, to counter the doom and gloom. The benefit in this transition that we're trying to accomplish from the failed model to the model of the future, the benefit is everyone benefits. This is a win-win-win-win-win. There's no one who's left behind when we allow honest discussion of the stock investing realities. You know, I often point out, and others have often pointed out, that the quote-unquote experts, they're financially compromised. If they tell the truth about investing, they're going to suffer horrible penalties in the marketplace because investors will hate them. But if investors are informed about how stock investing works, they won't hate people who tell the truth about stock investing. They will love them. And the investors will love being able to tell people all they've learned and use their intellectual skills for good. This is an opportunity. It's an opportunity. The investors, I don't think the experts are opposed to rational investing. I don't get that feeling. I get the feeling they're afraid to come out publicly in support of it until what they need, it's sort of, you know, like the story about belling the cat. They all want the cat to have a bell so that they'll know when the cat's coming. But, you know, they don't want to be the one sticking their head on the chopping block. But if we all stick our head on the chopping block at the same time, instant presto, it happens. The magic takes place. And we're over that hurdle. And there will be a flood of insights on how to invest, how investing really works. That's how I thought it was when I started. You know, I didn't know this stuff. I didn't know how political investing was. I thought they were all trying to just steer us right. I didn't know this stuff. But now that I know it, I see the opportunity before us if we take advantage of it. We can change things. We can make things better. You know, take a sad song and make it better. That's a song I believe in. I wanted to mention George Orwell. George Orwell wrote about politics. He wrote a book that was very influential to me. 1984, I read it when I was young. I was in seventh grade. And it sort of got me interested in politics. That's the book that got me interested in politics in the first place. And George Orwell talks about language. He talks about how totalitarians use language to limit what people can think. You know, he has the phrase in the book is, you know, freedom is slavery. You know, poverty is wealth. I'm not sure I have them right. Freedom is slavery, I know, is one. You know, war is peace, whatever. You know, everything's the opposite of what really is. So you can't think. You can't think clearly. You live in the society where it becomes impossible to think clearly, and thus it becomes impossible to ever achieve freedom. Because you don't, freedom is slavery. That's one of them. So you never can, you know, you're not even capable of thinking the idea of freedom, much less, you know, acquiring it. Well, that's where we stand in Investo World today, December 2008. What we hear is, you know, I had a whole blog. I had a whole podcast with the title, Time is Not a Four-Letter Word. What's the secret to successful investing? Timing the market. Timing the market. The secret is lowering your stock allocation when prices are insanely dangerous. That's timing the market. And what have we been told for 30 years? Timing is impossible. Timing is impossible. Timing is impossible. Timing is impossible. We're living in an Orwellian world. What is the most dangerous thing you can do in planning a retirement? Use one of the old school safe withdrawal rate studies. The numbers are wildly off the mark. They tell you that your retirement will be safe when it only has a 30% chance of surviving. They're using words to mean the opposite of what they really mean. And a retirement with a 30% chance of surviving is not safe. It's risky. The words risky and safe are not synonyms. They're antonyms. But we are not capable anymore of thinking clearly on investing because the language of investing has been poisoned because of these taboos. These taboos need to be lifted. This is a political issue. Getting the taboos lifted is a political problem, not an intellectual problem. Everyone knows that it's intellectually a bad idea to give people wrong retirement numbers. Come on. We all know that. It's ethically bad. It's not only intellectually bad, it's ethically bad, and of course it's economically bad. It does great damage to the economy to have millions of retirements fail. We all know this. But politically, it's controversial as all get out. Who will be the one to dare to correct an old school safe withdrawal rate study? Who will dare put his or her head on the chopping block? That's political. And we need to be thinking about how to solve that problem. One way to solve it, the way that I got into this story, is through public discussion boards. There was a thread at the, what was the name of the blog? Oh, I hope I can remember the name of the blog. I can't. There was a blog, and somebody posted a link to it at my blog, and so I went over there, and they were giving the basics of passive investing, you know. And the guy was very enthusiastic about it, and of course he made good points. All the people in the passive investing school get a lot of it right, because, as I said, Bogle is very much influenced by rational investing principles, and the rational part is wonderful. Indexing is wonderful. But I felt, obliged to put forward a comment pointing out the dangers of passive investing. So I tried to distinguish. Again, we get into this word question, the George Orwell issue. They call it passive investing, and what they're often referring to is not passive investing. They're referring to indexing. They call it passive investing, and then they list all these benefits that are not benefits of keeping your allocation the same. They're benefits of investing in an index rather than picking individual stocks. Well, indexing is wonderful. Rob Bennett's not against indexing. I love it. But I pointed out that indexing doesn't have to be passive. You don't have to invest irrationally to be in an index. You can engage in valuation-informed indexing. That's a non-passive approach. So again, the language enslaves us. But the question is, can we discuss these things on public forums? And, you know, there were several people in that thread who recommended people go to bogleheads.org. And, you know, I don't know how I feel about that. On the one hand, I think it's a great recommendation. I view bogleheads.org every day. I link to it two or three times a week at my site. So yes, in a way, I want as many people there as possible, because they'll all be sharing. Everybody comes from a different perspective, and I want them all sharing their insights and their experiences. You know, that's how we learn. We learn together. But of course, the bad side is that if somebody there goes and starts talking about valuation-informed indexing, they're going to shut them down. They're going to ban them. I had a guy, a well-known blogger, who Felix Salmon. And he wrote a review of the stock return predictor. He said it's a very powerful tool. You know, this is a great tool. And somebody linked to it at bogleheads.org, and the entire thread was taken down instantly. Because people there have banned honest posting in the past, and they're of course embarrassed by it. They've caused people great financial misery. And they're embarrassed by it. Well, how do we get over that? Again, that's a political issue. I don't think they intended to cause this misery, but they did. Now, you know, what I'd love to see is I'd love to see them get over that hurdle. I'd love to see them open up to the idea of, you know, letting that board be a resource that investors and experts can use to get us through this transition from the failed model to the model of the future. But you can't even say on that board today that passive investing is a failed model. You can hint at it. People hint at it. And it used to be the hints would be taken down. Now they allow the hints to stay, and that's progress. But it's not going to get the job done in any final way. You know, we need to go to the next step. So is it good to go to Bogleheads? Is it bad? I can't answer the question. My view is I'm going to continue recommending it, because the site has so much potential. You know, it's just, it could save the world, just about. I mean, perhaps that's overly dramatic, but it can save Investo World, can get us on the right track. All the pieces are in place for that board to do tremendous, unimaginably great work. But It's going to have to make some changes, you know? We need to have those articles showing up at indexuniverse.com, letting people know how to index, you know, the indexing model of the future. I think it's fair to say the indexing model of the future is valuation-informed indexing. We want to get that word out to people, you know, before there's another price crash. So these are the issues, the political issues that we're dealing with. Investing is a highly politically charged matter. It's not a liberal versus conservative dichotomy. There are liberals, you know, I've spoken to liberals who believe that people should know about the effect of valuations. And I've spoken to conservatives who believe that people should know about valuations. It's not a liberal conservative divide. But you know, one of the big questions I think is the question of whether people, you know, my sense of it is that average people have an interest in learning the realities. The big problem is that in most fields, it's the experts that set the agenda, and the experts feel the most threatened by the new model. They feel that, you know, they've acquired this expertise. They feel they have a vested interest in keeping the passive investing model alive. And of course, you know, there's nothing that says that we can't keep it alive. There's nothing that says, I certainly don't favor a ban on discussions of passive investing. People certainly should be allowed to advocate it. They should be allowed to practice it. They should be allowed to make points in favor of it. But I personally believe that if people hear the realities, that over time, passive investing will, you know, be less and less popular. But that's up to each individual investor to decide for himself or herself. But I believe strongly that we should be able to use public forums. And see, bogleheads.org is a public forum. This is a question that's going to have to be addressed on the internet. What are the public forums? That board, you know, you can't take a board like that and have thousands of people using it and have it linked to at Money Magazine and have it linked to at this blog this morning and have all these people coming in expecting to get accurate information on investing, and then have somebody like Taylor Larimore say, oh, we don't need to allow people to discuss the academic research of the past 30 years because we know it all. You know, the academic research from the 1960s and 1970s supported passive investing, so that's the end of the story. We don't have to allow any. We don't have to allow Shiller's work to be discussed. You know, that doesn't fly. And, you know, people need to address the inconsistencies in Bogle's statements, the inconsistencies in his thinking. That's important. I've discussed that. There's a podcast I put up, Bogle and Valuations. It discusses those inconsistencies in some depth. That needs to be explored. If people are going to use Bogle's thinking as the guide to their investing strategies, they need to know about the weaknesses in Bogle's thinking. That's part of the job. So if you're going to set up a board like that, you know, I think you have a responsibility. That's the way I would describe it. When you open a discussion board on investing, you take on certain responsibilities. Certainly, there's a responsibility to allow honest posting on retirement planning, for heaven's sake. These people have responsibilities, and they have failed to honor their responsibilities. That's just a fact. I don't say that to make them feel bad. I don't say that to rub it in. I don't say that to hurt their feelings. I say it because it's true. And they need to look in the mirror, and they need to get it behind them. You know, I want to be friends with these people. I think of them as my friends, but I can't not tell the truth. You know, I can't be put in a position of saying, well, I'll just ignore that, you know, they're going to put up a link. Someone's going to ask, how should I plan my retirement? Someone's going to put up a link to one of the old school studies, and I'm going to sit there and not say anything when I know that these studies are analytically invalid, that they get the numbers wildly wrong? That's not reasonable. So the political problem we need to deal with is we know we don't know all the truth about investing, but we know much of it, and we need to get it out before people. And people, you know, people have made mistakes, as people will, and that's caused political friction, and that needs to be overcome. And it's more pressing now than ever, because as Shiller says, we are dealing with a psychological problem. We need to restore confidence in the markets, and that's a political job. It's not an intellectual job. It's not an economic job. We need to solve these political problems. And a board like the Bogleheads board, I believe, is a public forum. We all of us interested in making constructive contributions have a right to contribute there. And so that's going to need to be, you know, that's one of the political issues we're going to need to address in days to come. So this is a surface treatment. These are tentative thoughts, by no means the last word on the politics of investing. But I hope you see by the end of this podcast how political investing really, really has become and how important these issues are. You can't just listen to the experts and think you're getting the whole story. The experts are trying, but their hands are tied to a large extent. Valuations are the third rail of, you know, investing discussions, and we need to change that. And it's not, you know, I point to Bogle, I say, you know, he should take the lead role, and I do think he should. I think he's best positioned. But it's not a Bogle job. It's an everybody job. It's a Rob Bennett job and a Robert Shiller job and a Taylor Larimore job and a Mel Lindauer job and a John Graney job and a John Walter Russell job. All of us. William Bernstein job, Scott Burns job, Michael Kitsis job, all of us. We all need to be involved in turning the tide, in making the transition from the failed, I call it failed, if you want to say it's not failed, please feel free. But we certainly need to open up the discussion so that alternatives to passive investing can be discussed in a free and open environment where people no longer feel intimidated to say what they truly believe deep in their hearts. Good luck with your investing strategies. Take care.